Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Julian Chan, and I'm the Research on EU Affairs for the Umbrella Union. Our chairman of the Umbrella Union is Mr. Simon Cheng, whom you may have heard about, as he was the former member of the British Consulate General in Hong Kong, who was tortured and detained by the mainland Chinese security force last year, and that made quite a lot of global news. And I was, in fact, also a former member of the British Consulate in both Hong Kong and Guangzhou, which is the third largest city in China in the southern part of the country. I am currently based in Brussels, so I am very much focused on the work for supporting Hong Kong people on the EU front, and I am also the founding member and vice director of a think tank called the Institute of China-Europe Affairs. Well, today I would like to firstly thank the organizers very much for inviting the Umbrella Union to take part in this very meaningful event in the annual conference on the theme of freedom versus communism. And I would like to begin by addressing a few of the topics that is very, very highly relevant to the current context of the Hong Kong's situation, namely the national security law, which is being introduced by Beijing into Hong Kong, and of course obtaining a lot of global attention from all across the different governments and societies. So with thanks to the organizer, Unica, she sent us a few questions which we would answer, as we thought it would be interesting for the audience, for you to understand a little bit more about, firstly, what is the role of Communist China, the Chinese Communist Party, in this situation. Secondly, I will address what I am fighting for, what we are fighting for as the Umbrella Union, along with other partner organizations. And thirdly, perhaps the most important question is, how can the free world, the liberal world, especially in the US, Europe and Poland, help the cause of the Hong Kong people? And also, of course, what is the dangers and threats for the Communist Party of China across Europe and Poland. So we'll explain a little bit more from our perspective as how we see things. So first of all, I would like to address the role and perspective of the Chinese Communist Party. Why did they especially decide to introduce this law, and why at this time? You may have read quite a lot about this already, but I'll just provide a brief overview and the historical context to which this started to take place. Since the handover of Hong Kong back to China from the UK in 1997, perhaps the most significant landmark in the few years after the handover was the protest in year 2003, which is, if you like, the first turning point in the Hong Kong's political scenes. So this really concerned at that time in 2003 the attempt by the Hong Kong and Beijing government to try to implement an article which is very commonly known as Article 23 of the Basic Law. This led 500,000, keep in mind that Hong Kong has a population at time of around 6 or 7 million. So 500,000 went on to protest on the streets. So this was a very, very significant event. And what caused this controversy from the Article 23 was an attempt to make Hong Kong introduce a law which would prohibit any act of treason, secession, sedition, and subversion against the Central People's Government. So because of the fact that Hong Kong people are They have always enjoyed a relatively liberal system under the British rule, which is in stark contrast politically with what is happening in mainland, and also given the diaspora of Hong Kong people, a lot of, for example, our parents' generation were the ones who escaped the Cultural Revolution and the horrors in the 60s and even in the 70s from mainland China fleeing to Hong Kong. So even after handover, the mainland Chinese were very, very worried about, for example, foreign political organizations and so on, trying to conduct political activities in Hong Kong. So it's been trying to write this particular article into the mini constitution known as Basic Law in Hong Kong to prohibit such organizations or bodies from establishing ties with foreign political organizations or bodies. Now, from the perspective of Hong Kong people, even back in 2003, there was a great deal of worry that it would immediately lead to a limitation of freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and so on. And these are the key values or principles that Hong Kong people have always believed in, as in the liberties are what differentiates Hong Kong and China, and what makes Hong Kong so successfully, not just economically, but with a lot of credibility and international reputation. So with half a million people protesting on the streets, this became what we can call as a political poison that the Hong Kong successive Hong Kong governments try to avoid afterwards. But Beijing has always wanted to continue pushing this through, but they knew that there would be a lot of difficulty, and especially with things taking more of a negative turn since Xi Jinping came into power from around 2012-13 onwards, the difficulty of pushing this law became even greater. So as a result, also, of course, along with the umbrella movement of 2014, which protested against Beijing's government to ban Hong Kong people voting, having genuine universal suffrage to vote for the chief executive, our leader. And this also led, of course, to the huge protests which started exactly 1 year ago, which was about this anti-extradition law. And because of the failure of the Hong Kong government to introduce this law, owing to the huge protests, Beijing government has grown increasingly impatient and wanted to impose this national security law, which is what we will talk a little bit more about. And the problem is that the failure of introducing these laws, for example, with the Article 23, has been a thorn in the neck for Beijing, because it feels that there have been anti-Chinese forces in Hong Kong who are trying to topple the regime, and this is the ultimate thing that the Communist Party in China is most fearful about, because they understand, they realize that their regime is at the end of the day very fragile, and that is why whenever it feels threatened, it feels that it needs to use whatever it takes in order to suppress any opposition or difference of opinions that it cannot tolerate. So therefore, with these, with the anti-extradition bill movement last year, Beijing has been thinking about the necessity of introducing such a law. Now, given the current context of what's been happening with the coronavirus and so on, Beijing feels that essentially it has now got the situation fully under control within China, while other countries are still very busy trying to put out the fire. So it feels that it could potentially just smuggle through this bill without gaining much international attention. Of course, we know that this has not been the case. The most notable reaction has, of course, come from the US, because we must understand the Hong Kong issue has been embodied, kind of mixed up in this key US-China big power rivalry. So what the Communist Party in China is trying to do is to take a huge gamble that in Beijing they think that most countries, even the most advanced economies, have developed relations with China over so many years that, you know, they have become dependent on China, with China now being the second largest world economy. So they will not be so willing to voice out or withdraw their investments and businesses just because of this law being imposed in Hong Kong. But of course, this whether this gamble is going to pay off, we'll have to see with it, with time. But most importantly, as a result of the protests, the anti-extradition bill protest last year, in the district council elections in Hong Kong, the pro-democratic side had a landslide victory, and right now. Over the past few months, the pro-democratic side have been trying to campaign to retake more seats in the Hong Kong's parliament, which we call the Legislative Council or LegCo. So right now, the pro-democratic camp has less than half the number of seats, which means that they only really have vetoing power rather than, you know, decision-making power. So that's why there's been this this urge, because of the parliamentary elections that are coming up in September, that the pro-democrats have introduced this plan called 35+ in order to take back at least half the number of seats, so that the Hong Kong government cannot pass through legislation as easily as they used to, because these legislation are very often against the democratic principles that Hong Kong people have been fighting for. So Beijing, if you notice, their rhetoric has been heavily emphasizing on the power and the rights it has on Hong Kong, over Hong Kong, and it wishes to use all of that. And this has been a very strong trend of Beijing's style of governance for some years, especially stepping up in recent times. It feels that if it has the power, it has to use it, and it has to use it to the maximum. Well, this is essentially because, as we know, that Beijing does not have any restraint on its powers, because it doesn't have a separation of the three powers, and the political really tries to guide the legislative. So that is also what exactly Hong Kong people are so fearful about. So this time, the national security law is aimed at giving Beijing essentially sweeping powers to ban acts of subversion, sedition, secession, and treason, like in the Article 23. But note that this time they modified the wordings. So whereas in Article 23 it says that these activities, the ones that we just talked about, are prohibited against central people's government, well, this version in the national security law has changed from a central people's government to state power, which is a big step up. And it also aims to include the Hong Kong government as part of this state power machine. What this means is that the national security law, is also aiming, by the way, to tackle what's called local terrorism, which is something new. This is not in this Article 23, and also as in Article 23, the foreign interference, which it still sees as core part of its problems. For example, there are many groups, political groups, organizations who go abroad to lobby for action against China. So Beijing sees this as a big headache to them. So that, you know, the main worry is that in Hong Kong, is that such powers, which are so broadly defined, you know, and one could never really know where the red line is, because it would keep shifting. Because, you know, in Hong Kong, we have rule of law, we have a sound legal system, whereas in the mainland, they can define in a very broad sense, and this would provide unlimited scope for arrests and detentions. And precisely because of this huge difference between the legal systems in Hong Kong and in the mainland, which is very arbitrary, we have to understand that law for mainland, for the Communist Party, is only a mere tool to achieve its political objectives. It's worth pointing out that in the mainland, there is a body called the Central Political and Legal Affairs Commission, which not only controls the law courts in mainland and also the appointment of judges. So you can see that there is a problem that the courts have no independence whatsoever. Now that this particular commission is responsible for the setting up of the National Security Agency that will be in Hong Kong, and this National Security Agency is what Hong Kong people are fearing most, because essentially this, you can see this as this secret police, secret service, so Chinese KGB, if you like, who will be operating in Hong Kong. And this commission will be likely, therefore, commanding the Hong Kong police force to cooperate with the activities of this new agency. And what can this agency do? It may potentially, force people into disappearances. You can call them kidnapping or abduction or arbitrary arrests. And until today, we still have no idea where these people, if they are arrested, will be trialed. Will it be through Hong Kong's courts, who will, you know, suddenly have to deal with a barrage of political cases and issues which are not, you know, which are not set out in the Hong Kong law, but or in the worst case scenario, that these arrests would mean that people would be sent to be trialed in mainland courts. So this national security law essentially is going to hugely reduce Hong Kong's freedom of speech, press, publication, assembly, and the fact that if you say the wrong thing, or you write, or you talk about the wrong things, you will be in trouble. So this is the situation in terms of where and how, why China is introducing this law, essentially because they are running out of patience for the Hong Kong government to introduce Article 23 as a local law, to set up this agency. From Beijing's perspective, is to solve the problem once and for all from Beijing's perspective. But as we have seen in amongst Hong Kong people over the past 20-odd years, we have always been putting up a very strong fight against the Chinese Communist Party. And even if this is going to really bring the end of Hong Kong, I think a lot of Hong Kong people will still continue to put up the fight. So in terms of what I am, the Umbrella Union rather, is working for, is the fact that we have come to a realization that the traditional roots of resistance against the Chinese Communist Party is being hugely limited after this law is implemented. So traditionally, existing roots of resistance include, as we talked about, amongst the parliamentary means, so amongst the Legislative Council. The second one would be on street protest, and the third one would be on the international front. And we can see that very clearly the first two options will be exhausted, they will come to an end once the security law comes into force. So despite there is a large number of anti-Beijing groups and political parties in Hong Kong who, you know, in the past they have been perceived as lacking in unity, but you know, increasingly, we feel that there is a sense of understanding amongst this pro-democratic camp that there is a need to coordinate and collaborate amongst each other in order to make this resistance effective. So the Umbrella Union is a newly established group which is operating in the UK, but also on the European front to raise awareness of human rights issues and civil rights abuse in Hong Kong. And also we are trying to combine that with high standards of cultural activities, projects and products in relation to Hong Kong on the international front. So we have sections covering education, on counselling, on culture, and also we're in the process of establishing a think tank and also creation of an apolitical BNO community. You may have noticed that the BNO is a really big topic at the moment. It stands for British National Overseas, and it is a group of passport holders numbering around 300,000 who are in Hong Kong who possess this particular type of passport, but they are not currently recognised as full British citizens. But the UK has been pledging to open up, make it easier for BNO holders to work and stay in the UK, extending their visa-free access from 6 months to 12 months, and also giving them prospect for potential citizenship, British citizenship. So this is very important because we understand that there would be maybe not an immediate or a mass exodus, but quite a big movement of Hong Kong citizens to the UK and also perhaps to the Commonwealth countries, you know, for example, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and of course the US as well. So the Umbrella Union is aiming to work on community building to fill in gaps which are not already present across the UK and Europe societies. Of course, we are also collaborating closely with groups which are focused on political lobbying, such as Hong Kong Watch, and also communities like Friends of Hong Kong, Britons in Hong Kong, and so on. So, you know, the work that we do includes supporting asylum seekers, because we sense that there will be more and more, Simon Cheng being one of them, who is having his asylum seeking process being reviewed at the moment. And also we would like to provide education and information sessions, for example, encouraging Hong Kong people to become civil servants in the UK, and also holding art, literature, cultural exhibitions and projects which maximize local communities' engagement with such groups. So this leads me to talk about a little bit more in terms of strategies and also what I would like to encourage you to do in support of the Hong Kong people and their fight internationally. You know, how can the free world help Hong Kong, and also what are the dangers to look out for? So I guess one of the most important issues is for example, to engage, for Hong Kong people to engage with European local communities. So I don't know if you know many Hong Kong people in Poland, or if you're friends or connections, colleagues or anyone who are at least aware of the Hong Kong issue. And this is what we would like to, you know, really work on, because the key to success in terms of making real change, let's say from the government perspective, is to engage much more, have much more engagement between Hong Kong people and the local communities. So the fact that you're listening to this series is already a very good start, and to try to have this further understanding of what the Hong Kong issue is. And perhaps, for example, following groups online and social media, following pages such as the Umbrella Union, we are on Facebook, and also on Twitter, is very, very important to keep updated with the very fast-moving developments that are happening in Hong Kong. And I guess, in terms of concrete action that you can do on a daily basis, the most important that I would encourage is to really rethink how you may be engaging with China in the way that you may not want to, or you may not be aware that you are engaging in the way with China. What I mean by that is simply the production chains that are currently linked to China, between China and Europe. So in Hong Kong, there is something called a yellow economic circle. And this is an idea which originated from last year, where Hong Kong people started to boycott products, brands, shops, which are linked very closely with supporting the mainland. And in a way to only support those shops or products or brands which are only supportive of Hong Kong people's values and principles. And so I would encourage you to do something similar in a European scale, is to really think about what you are buying. So because we are now talking about a diversification of production chains, there should be a less of a reliance on China, especially during the coronavirus. We know that, you know, China has been trying to portray themselves as this savior of sending all these protective equipment to the world, but essentially, they were the ones who started this virus in the first place. So, and also the products that they sent abroad were very problematic, of low quality. So, this really begs the question where we have to think about what is really responsible consuming, and in order to, you know, diverge away from a reliance on the Chinese production chain, which is being exploiting its own people. It is it is helping to strengthen the Chinese communist regime, because it knows that other countries cannot do without China, and we must change that. And especially in terms of the business community, for those of you who are in businesses, we must, I would like to remind you that the Chinese Communist Party is really much closer than you think, because China's reach of its ideology is far, far beyond its borders. So the third thing that I would like you to take away is to really monitor both the European and the Polish government's foreign policy actions. So as we know, as you may know, there's been China has been trying very hard to play what is called the divide and rule game, by exploiting the fact that the EU is lacking in unity when it comes to standing up against China. And this is probably the most direct threat of against any concrete kind of European unity. For example, through the initiative, something called the 17 plus 1, where China is trying to work with 17 Central and Eastern European countries, Poland included, to engage with them bilaterally rather than to deal with EU as a collective bloc, because it feels that maybe it may not be able to advance its interests as much. So it's very important that for you as Polish citizens to monitor your parliament in approving projects which may be related to China. For example, just only a few weeks ago, Hungary managed to smuggle a railway project through its parliament, and this has been one of the pilot projects of China's Belt and Road Initiative, which is called the especially in the Serbia to Hungary railway project. And this is something which is hugely economically unsustainable, and it is only aimed at increasing China's influence in Europe. And Poland has also been involved in a number of Belt and Road initiatives, especially one which is the China-Europe Freight Train Express, which ends with one of the routes which ends in Poland. So it is really important to keep an eye on limiting China's influence in Europe, because by allowing China to enter Europe and gain access to resources or political influence, it would be a very heavy threat towards European values. So at the end of the day, it is most important to hold China to full account to everything that they do, because as we know that China pays no respect to a rules-based system, nor does it respect agreements and treaties. For example, you know, the Hong Kong one country, two systems is enshrined in the Sino-British Joint Declaration of 1984, which is lodged with the UN. And this is a valid treaty agreement, which is supposed to be in force until 2047. But essentially, China's act to introduce this national security law is just to rip up, to tear up the entire treaty. So just keep in mind that you cannot deal with China like dealing with any third country, because they are using a very heavy state-led approach to try and impose their own ideology. And also, in terms of diplomacy, having this wolf warrior-like aggression, which is aimed at reshaping global rules, orders, and institutions. So everyone must guard against that before it becomes too late. Us in Hong Kong, we are close to China, we have felt what China is able to do, but China could really be at the door, at your doorstep tomorrow and very soon. So my, I guess my one of my final messages is that please do not romanticize or be naive about China in the way that, for example, Chinese propaganda wants to portray the country through different means, through TV, through Confucius Institutes, through various forms of hard power, let's put it that way. And keep in mind also that the EU has categorized China as a systemic rival, not just economically, but also in the political and ideological sense. So that on the European front, it really is very important that there is a continued effort amongst various member states, that there is a lobbying, group and attention that is focusing on the Hong Kong issue continuously, and maximize this attention across the different institutions that can, you know, take concrete action. So, of course, on the highest level, we have the European External Action Service. So this is what we are trying to do from the Brussels front, also with the Commission, Parliament and Council. But in terms of safeguarding the European values and principles that are, you know, in terms of human rights, rule of law and democracy, these are values that Hong Kong people have always believed in and have fought to, very hard for to defend. And this has come at the cost of many, many young people being arrested and probably losing their freedom for many years to come. So, you know, this is something that we should all be keeping in mind on a daily basis in every, you know, aspect to our engagement with between Europe and China. It is very important that, you know, we should maintain this rules-based system, fair competition, and also a liberal democratic system that is really in the interest of all governments to keep in order to maintain a certain level of stability, whereas China is aiming to reshape all this. So this is what I have more or less to say, and I hope that you can take some concrete action and keep the free world going strong. Thank you very much.